Hi, I'm Valerie, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 361. I'm your host, Valerie George, and with me today is Perry Romanowski. Hi, Perry.
Hello, Valerie.
Welcome back. We have a good show. Today, we're going to cover lots of questions, including how do different hair bond repair products compare? What makes nail polish strengtheners work? Does skin know when it's too dry? Finally, what are exosomes and why are they in skincare products? But first, inane chit chat. How was China?
China was great, Valerie. I was in Shanghai for about 10 days doing some official IFSCC business and then visiting some factories there. And I also spoke at a conference there. So it was pretty crazy.
What happened to your luggage?
My luggage didn't make it there. So there was 2 days I didn't have luggage. I just had with what I wore, you know. So I had to go running in my flat shoes and stuff because I have to keep my running streak alive.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had nothing. And it was for 2 days. But so when I first landed there, I had to go to the store and buy some clothes. But the thing is, nobody speaks English there, right? And I just, I'm walking around and I find this shirt and it's got a collar and it's buttoned down. I'm like, all right, I'll get that. And I was kind of in a hurry because I was in a meeting. I was in between meetings. So I got this shirt. And then the weird part, it was the shirt. It was wrapped in plastic, but it also came with matching pants. And I'm like, I don't really need
what?
The pants, but okay. So I wear the shirt for like 2 days. It was the only thing I had for 2 days. So then I get home and I show my wife this shirt. And she goes, you know, that's pajamas.
That's why it came with matching pants.
Right. I didn't even realize. It looked like a shirt to me.
Oh, gosh. I bet you the people of China were like, who is this man wearing pajamas during the day?
No, I just thought, like, you know, people in China probably just wore these loose fitting clothes and stuff. I didn't know.
Classic.
I went to the store and bought the first thing I saw, and it was just this hanging shirt. It looks like a nice shirt, but apparently it's pajamas.
Oh my goodness. Well, while you were shopping in China, I was here with my dad and mom, my uncle and my cousin, the cousin who always got me into trouble when I was younger.
Oh no.
We were here doing construction in my lab.
Oh, wow. Building out the new lab, I guess, huh?
Yeah, doing lots of demolition, making repairs, swapping out the insulation, filling holes. So we were very busy and very dusty.
It sounds like an episode of something on HGTV or something.
Well, the demolition side and, right, you know, yeah. And reinstalling some of it. But my cousin and I did demo these two walls. So that was fun because we're very good at that. And he only dropped one sheet of drywall onto my back and head.
Ouch. It sounds like you've had a few injuries.
I have a few bruises on me right now, but it was a lot of fun.
And you have that mark on your hand.
Yep. My mom brought her cat with her. Her cat is very evil and she doesn't let other people touch her.
Oh.
And she lets me touch her sometimes, but she does things where she tricks you. So you always ask if you can pet her and she'll tell you yes or no. She makes two very distinct, different sounds. And she didn't tell me no. And so I said, okay, I'm going to scratch her head. And she let me. She kind of leaned into it, pretended she was liking it for about 4 seconds. And then she came around and inserted her fang into the pad of my thumb.
My.
I felt it go in. I had to pull it out. And I thought, that really hurt. And it does really hurt. So hopefully it doesn't get infected. I can keep my thumb.
Yes. You better dip it in alcohol or something.
Yeah. And you can't get mad because she's just always been evil. So.
Yeah. Yeah. At least you know what you're getting with her.
Well, let's head over to beauty news. We have a lot to cover.
Well, I just saw this first story, which was kind of an interesting matchup, you know, or so two companies getting together. I saw that. You know the cheese brand, Velveeta?
It's pretty good. It has an interesting taste, and sometimes, you know, it's what you want.
Well, how would you like that as a hair color? It turns out Velveeta Gold is a semi-permanent hair color that was launched just at the beginning of April, but it was not an April Fool's joke. It was a beauty food collaboration. So this limited edition Velveeta Gold makes your hair look like Velveeta cheese.
I actually thought this was really cool because I also did think it was an April Fool's joke. And I'm like, but it came out on April 2nd. They were a day late in publishing the news. And it was not a joke.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's an interesting look. I wonder how long it'll stick around. But I wonder what company they teamed up with.
It didn't say in the article, and it didn't even say where you could get it. So I would be interested to take a look at this because as the listeners of the Beauty Brains know, I do hair color for a living. Not color on people, but I formulate hair color for a living. And it's a really beautiful shade that's perfectly yellow and perfectly orange at the same time. It really does look like Velveeta cheese.
Yeah. And now it's another area where food is crashing into beauty. You know, that seems to happen a lot in our industry, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
What did you see?
Every once in a while, these articles pop up about men and makeup. And my very first job in the industry was actually at a male skincare and makeup brand. And this was 14 years ago. And at that point in time, we were always like, we are on the crux of something huge. Males want to incorporate makeup into their routines. They want to use it. And it was a niche market at the time. A couple years later, the men in makeup and the male grooming is booming. Well, that didn't really pan out. A couple years after that, male makeup, male grooming is going to be huge. And now we have this new article reporting that 72% of U.S. male consumers between 18 and 34 use makeup. This was a Mintel survey. And I just think that number is a little bit high.
Yeah, a little. I find this very difficult to believe. Mostly based on like the males that I know from in that age range, like all my nephews and such.
18 to 34, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. None of them are using makeup, and I know a lot. I know at least a dozen people in this age range. None of them are. And if 72% were, wouldn't somebody be using it?
I think that it would be a bigger market if males were using it, and maybe they are using it and borrowing from their significant others. I don't know. I just think that number is really high. And another thing the study reported was that this was a surprising finding for the Mintel researchers was that 8 in 10 male cosmetic users say their goal is to wear the least amount of makeup as possible.
Okay.
I don't know how that's surprising, but I wasn't surprised to see that.
The least amount would be none, right?
Well, what else did you see besides Velveeta?
Well, I saw another celebrity launched a line, and Serena Williams.
Yeah, I did see this as well. The packaging's really cool. Have you noticed what it looks similar to?
Sort of. It looks like fructis to me. I don't know. The green, right?
No, it's the color of a tennis ball.
Oh, there you go. Which fructis is the same color as a tennis ball, too. But yes, it is. And actually, she calls it Win Beauty, W-Y-N.
A little play on words for winning, like the word win.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks like she retired from tennis in 2022, and she's been busy in the lab and the boardroom. Although I can't imagine Serena Williams went into the lab and was mixing stuff together.
Yeah, she probably went in the lab and said, oh, let me try this skincare cream.
Has that ever happened to you? Like when you were working on a celebrity brand and the celebrity comes in and says, hey, let me mix something so I can say it was
I'm
mine.
Like, can you check the pH and viscosity of that spindle 5? Thanks.
Yeah, but they do usually come and do a tour of the lab so they can feel like they were part of the process there. It looks like she has launched a makeup line here. So 10 makeup essentials.
There's a waterproof liquid eyeliner, a pencil eyeliner, a brow pencil, tubing mascara, which we've talked about on the show before, lip oil, 2 lipsticks, a multitasking lip and cheek tint, matte concealer, and what magazine editors are considering the hero product, a tinted sunscreen.
Yeah, the tinted sunscreen. I guess that makes the most sense for like a tennis player.
Well, yeah, it's probably things that she'll use. I personally think the collection is a little lip heavy, but what do I know? What I thought was interesting about this was that in reading about the launch, usually a celebrity has a pretty compelling story, or maybe even not, about why they've created this, you know, something that they just put their names on. It felt like she was pretty involved.
Yeah. You know what I wondered? If you look at it, the stuff that she's launching is kind of things that are already out there on the marketplace. And it says, you know, she was launching it for something to cater to the lives of everyday women. So perhaps it's reasonably priced, but you think of brands and what's the reason for being, and what's the reason for this beyond this is a celebrity and you can kind of look like the celebrity or use what the celebrity uses. I don't see another driving reason for being. Do you?
No. Usually when a celebrity or a known person comes out with a line, they provide a reason or the impetus for them focusing on a total change in career direction.
Right.
And it doesn't even have to be a meaningful reason. Usually it's, oh, I felt there was a gap in the market, or I wanted to create something that was for me. And we didn't really get any reasoning in the launch of the line. Not that we have to, but I find that, you know, there isn't anything really different from what other brands have to offer, although I'm sure the products are really great. As you said, sure, it's not that anything was created that's not out there. So I would love to hear her reasoning for it. And I would love to know if she's doing this full time, like Jessica Alba left Hollywood to go do Honest Beauty. Is this Serena's focusing on next, or is this just a little hobby that she came up with? Only time will tell the truth in that, right? If there's some longevity and growth to the brand, then we'll know that she's really, really all in.
Right. Or she's just putting her name on it and hoping to cash in, which some celebrities will do too.
Yeah. I would be excited to try it. I think the Win Beauty No Words Needed Lip Serum looks really interesting. I think the line probably overall is a little lip heavy. Like, do you need two lipsticks and a lip serum and a lip and cheek tint? But, you know, I'm not in the color cosmetics industry by choice. So what do I know?
Sure. I have to say, I mean, I know how to make all these products. It just seems like a lot of work for putting
it
stuff on.
It is. Yeah.
Which is why I find it hard to believe 72% of men do use these makeup products, right?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the one nice, I'm sure all the products are nice, but the one nice product that I'm interested in seeing that I think actually will make a difference on skin is the SPF, because sunscreen is the only way to protect skin from premature aging and increase in odds of getting skin cancer. Also, when sunscreen is tinted, it uses these pigments called iron oxides to make the tint. And those actually help with visible light protection, which helps reduce the formation of uneven hyperpigmentation on the skin.
Ah, yes. So a multifunctional product there. Well, we'll see where that celebrity beauty line ends up in the future. There was one final article that I saw that got my goat a little bit. It was a publishing Pop Sugar, and it says, animal testing is still the beauty industry's ugliest secret. And then I'm reading this article because I know how much animal testing is gone on in the beauty industry, or that goes on now, which is pretty much not much at all, right?
It's hardly ever done. In most of the United States, individually have a law.
All right, so I'm looking at this article, and this author wants to, you know, blow the whistle on all this animal testing going on. And so then she goes, well, let's look at where animal testing is still going on. And the first thing she talks about is medical grade and at-home aesthetic devices. So that's not cosmetics. That's medical devices, right?
Right. And I'm not aware that a medical device necessarily has to be tested on animals, because I have colleagues whose companies launch devices all the time and there's no animal testing.
Right. But you can see maybe there is some parts that are, but again, that's not the beauty industry. That's like the pharmaceutical industry or something. And surprise, yeah, pharmaceuticals are still being tested on animals. That's not a surprise, but those are not cosmetics.
And the gentleman who provided this quote, Dr. Hitchcock, he says medical grade skincare.
Right.
right? Or at least the way it's written could be like medical grade type things. And that's not even a real thing in the cosmetics industry. So I'm not sure whether that came through correctly or maybe he's misunderstood, but that doesn't happen.
You know, it is interesting when you get quoted by these magazines and such. I get asked by reporters frequently for some quotes, and then I'll see what the article ends up being. And I'm like, maybe I said that, but that's not quite what I meant or something. Or sometimes they'll just use your words in a ways that you didn't mean it. So maybe the doctor was misunderstood there. But yeah, medical skincare is, unless it has a pharmaceutical in it, it's a cosmetic and it's not being tested on animals.
Now, the one thing that is going on outside of the United States, Canada, the EU, the UK, is that certain geographies do require animal testing. Even though China has stepped back a little bit on their requirement of testing imported products, there are several categories. Even if you're doing cross-border sales from a neighboring country into China, China still retains the right to do animal testing, especially on certain categories of products like sunscreens and hair color. And additionally, I believe Russia and Brazil also have some animal testing that they can do, not that it's a requirement in their country. But for the most part, if a brand's selling in the United States, Canada, UK, EU, maybe Australia, animal testing just isn't being done on finished products.
Right.
And it's just not being done on the individual ingredients anymore, unless there's another requirement, such as an environmental requirement.
Or a worker's safety requirement also. Sometimes that's happening. But again, that's not the beauty industry doing that.
It's other industries.
This article makes it seem like, oh, the beauty industry still was testing on animals like they've always been. And it's just not true at all. The final thing here, and I read this frequently at places, they talk about alternatives to animal testing and how, you know, everything that animal tests are used for have alternatives to them. And this is just not true. We are not nearly as far along in alternatives to animal testing as people would imply. Certainly, we have cell cultures that we can test certain sensitivities on, but you cannot do an overall systemic test like, you know, whether it's going to impact pregnancies or whether it's going to impact organs, because we don't have duplicate organs that you could test on. So that's just not true that alternatives are all there.
Reproductive toxicity is a great example of a category that non-animal testing alternatives just aren't there yet. And toxicology is very complex. You just can't do one test or two tests and say, oh, well, it's good. If you read toxicology assessments of different ingredients, there's many, many, many categories and many tests for each category that they're reviewing to make a decision on.
I think the bottom line to me on this is the story should be that animal testing has been significantly reduced in the cosmetic industry, and people are very sensitive to it, and they don't want to do it. And it's not this big secret that the industry is trying to hide, like this article is suggesting.
Let's head over to some beauty questions.
Valerie, you know what is special about today's questions, all of them?
What's special about them?
They've all come from patrons. That's right. Every single question was submitted by one of our fabulous patrons. And if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe at any level, and your questions get higher priority. And so that's what all of these people, we thank all of them, and we thank all of our patrons for supporting the show. The show isn't free to produce, and we don't take advertising because we don't want to have to bias our opinions. So thank you so much to our patrons, and let's get on with the questions.
Our first question comes to us from Erica. Hi, Beauty Brains. I'm back with another question regarding the Redken Acidic Bonding Pre-Shampoo Treatment. This time, I'd like you to compare it with L'Oreal Everpure Bond Repair Concentrate. At $10, it's less than a third of the cost of the same Redken product. I've been using this line on my platinum bleached hair since it came out, and I'm thrilled with the results. I'd be even happier to save money, though, if the L'Oreal product is the same. Thanks for your insight.
Well, let's see. The L'Oreal product says 14% bonding care complex with citric acid.
Well, what is the bonding care complex?
That is a very good question. So I'm taking a look at the ingredient list. I only laugh here because I look at this and I'm like, hey, this is a hair conditioner. So you have water,
it's a hair conditioner.
C-terol alcohol, glycerin, behene trimonium chloride, sterile alcohol. I mean, all of these are hair conditioners. Where is this bonding piece? Oh, it says other ingredients. So it's citric acid and other ingredients.
Citric acid is the primary bonding active. But to make it sound more impressive, because you can't use a ton of citric acid, I bet you they are saying that the behene trimonium chloride and perhaps maybe the glycerin and the top portion of the ingredient list makes up this bonding concentrate. That would be my guess.
They also have hydroxypropyl guar, so they have the cationic polymer too. But come on, these are, and they have polyquaternium 10. So come on, this is just a hair conditioner. Where's the bonding piece?
Well, the citric acid does help change the way in which water interacts with the hair, which helps give the perception of hair strength. So the citric acid, there is some scientific literature out there about it, but they've hung their hat on citric acid because way back when, not sure if you guys remember this, Olaplex sued L'Oreal because they said L'Oreal was interested in buying us. We gave them trade secrets.
Right.
L'Oreal took those trade secrets, declined to buy us, and then came out with their bonding line. And I have always hypothesized that L'Oreal figured out what Olaplex was doing and said, this isn't unique, and we can just go do the same thing with other chemistry. And that's what L'Oreal did. But they are prohibited from selling those product lines any further. So they had to come up with a new technology. And so they said, well, you know what? Some scientists in the hair research field have said citric acid can basically act as a bond builder in hair. And so they've hung their hat on this citric acid complex.
Okay.
To me, that's my consumer perceptive series of events that's happened. That's what I think happened. So the launch didn't actually happen within L'Oreal. It actually happened within Redken. And Redken came out with this acidic bonding concentrate serum. Now, the Redken product is a salon professional product. So you can get it at Ulta, which has a salon in it, but its primary mode of getting to a consumer is in a salon.
Wait a second. Are we saying Redken and L'Oreal are the same company?
Well, L'Oreal owns Redken.
There you go. So yes.
Yes, they're probably the same. This is what I was building up to. So then this trickle-down effect Perry and I have talked about before on the show, Redken launches and makes a big to-do about this acidic bonding concentrate. And then L'Oreal Paris with their Everpure brand, which is a mass market consumer brand, they have come out with the same technology. So I would say you probably might be happy with it.
Yeah, it's certainly worth trying because it's the same company, so they're just sharing technologies.
Exactly. And I use probably and might, which are two softy hypothetical things. So in case Erica doesn't like it, I said, well, you probably and you might.
Well, even so, they're going to have different fragrances. And so your perception of how you like a product is a lot based on how it smells. But I look at this product, I'm like, this is a hair conditioner. So citric acid, whatever.
It's a hair conditioner.
All right.
Although I do really like the Redken Acidic Bonding Concentrate series. We did a lot of extensive evaluation with it in my previous life, and it was really well received. They did a great job on it. And so if L'Oreal's using the technology, probably a similar chassis in the conditioner with the emulsifiers and conditioning agents, I would pay a third of the price too.
So you're saying I can't just take VO5 conditioner and put in a little citric acid before I use it and get the same thing?
You could. 1%. I'd start with 1%.
All right. We're not encouraging people to make conditioners at home, though. So how about we move on to the next question? This one comes to us from Amanda. Hi, Perry and Valerie. Like Valerie, I'm a big Dazzle Dry Polish fan. You had mentioned that on a previous show, if I recall correctly.
I do love it. And in fact, I was in LA last week for work, and this other girl said, oh, I use Dazzle Dry. And I said, oh my gosh, I love Dazzle Dry at this meeting. And so this other girl was like, what is Dazzle Dry? And we had a a convert, hopefully, out of that meeting.
There you go. And Dazzle Dry doesn't even pay us sponsorship. So there you go. All right, back to the question. It's an amazing product that dries super fast and can last 10 plus days of wear. The strong adhesion of the polish has led to some peeling and surface damage to the nail plate, which I'm trying to improve. I have naturally soft, peely nails to begin with. Could you explain the differences between nail treatment ingredients, including malic acid, 1,6-hexanediamine, the acetylmandelic acid, the dimethylurea, the tosylamide formaldehyde... tosylamide formaldehyde resin, and the other one is this Tips nail conditioner, which claims other ingredients. So there you go. So she wants to know the difference between all of these ingredients. So what say you, Valerie?
I'm actually surprised that Amanda's having some peeling and surface damage to her nail plate, because I don't think that that's coming from the Dazzle Dry. That may be more to do with the way in which the nail bed is prepared before the Dazzle Dry is applied, because you do have to do a lot of buffing to the nail plate in order for the polish to get really good adhesion, which is partially how the Dazzle Dry works. So I'm surprised to hear that, because it also just comes off with an acetone-based nail polish remover. So I would maybe even try a different salon and see if you're having some of the same challenges. But also, I have really hard nails. I actually even have to use like those giant toenail clippers to cut my fingernails, because my nails are like really tough.
Oh, wow. Those are
so
hard
nails. I don't have that soft, peely experience. Yeah, but I'm just surprised, because I don't think the Dazzle Dry would do that. But it sounds like Amanda wants to use a nail strengthener to help treat her nails in between. And the thing that maleic acid, acetylmandelic acid, dimethylurea, and the tosylamide formaldehyde resin have in common is that they're all cross-linkers. So the maleic acid and the acetylmandelic acid is similar chemistry-ish to the Olaplex molecule, which builds bonds in hair. Hair is keratin. Your nails are also keratin. And so these ingredients are just simply cross-linking your keratin proteins to provide strength.
Now, when we talk about cross-linking, you have to understand about the way nails and hair are put together. They're put together with keratin, and keratin is a long-chain polymer. So it's this essentially a really, really long molecule, and it's like a straight line, right? And then you put another one next to it. And so it's almost like you're taking threads and you're putting the threads all next to each other, and that creates either the hair or the nail. Now, what these cross-linkers are doing is they're creating bonds between those threads, those polymer change, and that's what makes it stronger. So so when we talk about cross-linking, it's cross-linking between the polymers in a way that is not naturally occurring.
Exactly. So any nail treatments that contain these ingredients, I actually really would believe to help strengthen the nails, because they're reinforcing the keratin molecules that are laying next to each other to have more strength to them. So I believe that works for sure.
Now, if you're talking about what are the differences between all of these, it looks like to me like dimethylurea and the formaldehyde resin, they're both going to create essentially the same cross-linking molecule. Malic acid, I think it bonds. Does that bond with sulfur-sulfur bonds together, the cysteines together? Yeah, like the formaldehyde will bond essentially any kind of amino acid can bond across. So I think essentially the formaldehyde probably would create more bonds than the malic acid. But nobody wants to put formaldehyde in their products anymore, so they've gotten away from that.
Yeah, and it's the dimethylurea and the formaldehyde resin are smaller molecules, so they have a better ability to penetrate the nail plate and create these bonds, whereas maleic acid and acetylmandelic acid probably have less ability to penetrate into the nail bed.
All right, what about this Tips and their secret ingredients?
The Tips nail conditioner. The ingredient list is soybean oil, tocopherol, phenoxyethanol, methylparaben, butylparaben, ethylparaben, propylparaben.
Wow, that's a lot of parabens.
And other ingredients.
Other ingredients.
We've talked before that you can list some ingredients maybe not on the show, we've talked before, but you and I have talked before about the ability to just list ingredients as like a trade secret. And you reminisce that that's something that happened in the past.
Right, right. We used to do that on a leave-in conditioner because we were buying this ingredient they called Base C. It didn't have some official INCI designation, so we would just call that, and other ingredients in our product. But that was back in the early 1990s.
Well, you're not really allowed to do that anymore because if it's in a product, your product has to have an ingredient list under the law. But there is a little, we'll call it not a loophole, but just a provision in the law where the FDA can't force a company to disclose a trade secret on their ingredient list. But that doesn't mean you could just say anything you want is and other ingredients because that's your trade secret or your right to a trade secret. You actually have to request trade secret status from the FDA. And so it's this pretty robust application, and you have to disclose for the FDA's evaluation the extent to which the ingredient is known inside your company and outside your company, what you've done to protect that information, as well as how easily it can be duplicated. You also have to disclose the value of the identity of the ingredient to your competitors, and the FDA will review this application, and they won't disclose the information to anyone. It's like, you know, your secret. If they grant you trade secret, your trade secret request, you can disclose and other ingredients on your ingredient list. But if they deny it, you have to disclose what the ingredients are. And I suspect that this company has not filled out a trade secret application because I just don't believe what they're using is probably a trade secret. Like the probability of it being an actual proprietary ingredient that gives them a competitive advantage is probably just not there. I bet you they're using things that other people are using and they just don't want to put it on the ingredient list.
You know, another possibility, and I'm just spitballing here, is that it
could be
that they made a production run and then they made like a million labels and they're just trying to run through those. But they've been doing that since the early 1990s because, I mean, who uses all those parabens still either?
Yeah, in an oil-based product.
Right. It's kind of, so maybe this is just an old product. I don't know.
Yeah, that could also be a possibility, but it's just not really done anymore. I mean, the reason brands are moving away from and other ingredients is because what they're doing doesn't actually qualify as a trade secret. And people have a right to know what they're being exposed to. That's just how I feel. Even if they don't understand what they're being exposed to, people have a right to know.
I totally agree. You shouldn't use your ingredient list as a marketing material. It's just to inform consumers.
Exactly. Our next question comes to us from Timothy, our super fan. Hi, Perry and Valerie. I have this lingering possible myth that has been haunting me. Insert spooky music. Does the skin have a compensatory mechanism for detecting when skin is too dry? I've heard skincare lovers tell people that they might have oily skin because their skin is actually super dry, and so the skin is overcompensating and therefore producing too much oil. I've always asked myself, what could that mechanism be? Nerve endings? How does our skin barrier know when it's missing natural moisturizing factors? Or is this simply a myth? Appreciate you. Timothy with his four cats cuddled up alongside him.
Wow, four cats. That's great.
Wow, that's a lot.
that is a few cats. All right, this is an interesting question, and you have to go to a little bit of biology to think of an answer. Now, sebum is produced in the lower layers of the skin, in the dermis, and essentially it produces sebum and that slowly goes up to the top surface of your skin where it, helps the skin create a barrier and stay hydrated. But there's no signaling from the top of the skin down to the dermis that says, hey, it's time to produce more sebum. The thing that produces, that causes sebum to overproduce or underproduce is mostly has to do with hormones and hormone levels, right?
Exactly. Sebum production in the sebaceous glands, which are attached to hair follicles within your skin,
right.
are triggered by androgens, which are hormones. And so these androgens tell your body, produce sebum, get rid of some of this other stuff in the sebum. And that hormone signal can't come from within itself. So your skin, your upper layer of skin, which is actually dead, there's no right. biological activity happening in the very outermost layer of your skin in the stratum corneum. It's not possible for that skin to signal down to other cells like Merkel cells, which are part of your nerve complex in your skin, and tell your body, hey, I need you to start producing more sebum. I'm dry up here.
There's no top-down way. The only way I can imagine is if you somehow get an injury or something, and then you... What are those? The Langerhans cells that can communicate?
Langerhans cells.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're part of your skin's natural immune system. They're dendritic cells, so it's a little round-shaped cell, but it has all these tentacles coming off of it. It kind of reaches out into the lower layers of your skin. And if your barrier is compromised and you have a foreign invader come in, whether it's a pathogen or just things are getting into your skin or getting out of your skin that shouldn't be there, the Langerhans cells will tell your skin's immune system, hey, trigger an immune response,
right.
Which does bring up some inflammation. So that's not going to tell your sebaceous glands to start secreting that I'm aware of, unless these Langerhans cells said, hey, body, we need to lubricate the skin. But it would just be with, I don't know. I just don't think that happens. I don't think that creates like an androgenetic response.
It's certainly not the notion that, oh, my skin's dry and my body's going to produce more oil because of it. So I think that part is just a myth. All right, we've got another one from a patron, Michael. Hello, I'm a big Beauty Brains fan from Germany. You have inspired me to launch my first hair care line. Wow,
oh,
thank you.
Oh, wow, there yay. I can't wait to see what it is. Michael, please share that with us.
I have a question about the new Exosome line from Barbara Strum. I can't find any exosomes in the INCI. The INCI is the Dictionary of Cosmetic Ingredients that everyone uses. The only thing is it has a simple oligopeptide-1 and for a bold 470 euros. So as a cosmetic chemist, I find this really outrageous. Yeah, it is kind of is. What do you guys think about it? Best from Cologne, Michael.
Wow, 470 euros, which is about $435, at least in the U.S., is what the eye cream costs.
Wow.
From Barbara Sturm, which is a pretty hefty price tag.
But it has exosomes. So what are these exosomes? You know, I remember exosomes from biology because
exactly.
A little known fact, I was a bio major right up until my last year of college when I was looking for a job and there were no jobs for biology majors. So I switched to chemistry, went one more year, and I got into the beauty industry. But I feel bad for you biology people because you got to get a PhD to get like a job. So, but anyway, that is just an aside. Exosomes are they're organelles in a plant, essentially. It's like a vesicle that you'll find in a plant cell. And they are they're small organelles that can help to communicate between cells. So plants don't have like veins and arteries like we do. So they have to communicate between cells using these exosomes. So
think of it like when you were at a bank in the 1980s or 1990s,
yeah.
At least in the United States and Canada. You had to have at your car, you drove up to the bank. And the bank teller was in the building, and you would have a little tube that
little
you would send
tube,
from
yeah.
your car to the bank, and the bank teller would send the tube back to you. That's an exosome.
Wait, my bank still does that.
Oh.
So that's still
Gee,
going
who
on.
Who do you bank with?
It must be an older bank, but it was taken over by Chase, but it was there. But so some banks still do it. But yes, that's exactly how that works. They're like little communication vesicles. So why are they in our skincare?
Well, I first heard of exosomes in skincare almost 2 years ago. I was doing a skincare project for a dermatologist-founded brand, and the dermatologist was really interested in adding exosomes to the products. And I was like, well, I know what an exosome is from biology, but I've never really heard of it for skincare. And it actually turns out it's something that's being adopted from the medical research industry because it hadn't been used in skincare.
Yeah.
And there are medical studies out there that exosomes, which are bioengineered vesicles that might be loaded with, for example, messenger RNA derived from bone marrow. And they would inject these exosomes into the skin or into wounds. And they found that the little RNAs or whatever was in the bioengineered vessels would help with cell growth, collagen synthesis, and wound closure. And by the way, these studies were in mice models. So if you are interested in exosomes, just know that on a whole, the medical industry is doing animal testing to test what they do. So basically, exosomes are used in medical care. But of course, skincare companies are latching onto this, but we can't really use bone marrow derived ingredients or have messenger RNA inserted into any vesicles and have them delivered into human skin topically. That's not allowed.
Also, what I want to point out is that the way these exosomes work is that they have to get inside a living cell. So they would have to get down to the dermis and then get absorbed by the skin cells because they are able to pass through the barrier wall of a living skin cell. And then they could open up and put whatever payload they are. Getting that to go through the skin all the way down to the dermis is a big challenge.
Huge challenge. So when we look at different ingredients that are called exosomes on the internet, we have these ingredient databases we could look at. If you take a look at them, the actual ingredient lists don't present themselves to be anything impressive.
Right. They're not. First, they don't use the word exosome, but what you will see is they're plant extracts. You know, the plant extracts. So I guess the supplier is figuring, well, if we take some plant cells, they're going to have some exosomes in them because they naturally will. And so we can just call it plant exosomes and yay. There you go. It reminds me of plant stem cells, to tell you the truth. But so you exactly. might see Cantella astrea leaf vesicles, or you might see Saccharomyces cerevisiae extract or something like that. You won't see exosomes.
What I think the Sturmline is doing is not actually using a liposome or an exosome type vesicle, but what I think they're doing is using peptides like oligopeptide 1 is actually a synthetic human peptide. So it mimics a peptide that's naturally found in our bodies, which is considered to be a human epidermal growth factor. And so instead of using this vesicle to insert it, it's just the peptide put into the formulation, which if it did what it says it's going to do, it's going to accelerate growth of epidermal cells. And it would accelerate the growth of epidermal cells, which would help with anti-wrinkle and anti-aging purposes.
Yeah, and it has molecular width of 6,200 Daltons, which, you know, that seems a little higher than the 500 Dalton rule to get through your skin, huh?
It's a big peptide, but who knows what peptides are there? Because certain peptides will help facilitate penetration, but 6,200 Daltons is pretty big.
Yeah, that sounds pretty big. Speaking of pretty big, the size of the minutes of this show are already pretty big, and I think I hear in the music.
Oh gosh, that's all the time we have for, guys. Thanks for listening.
Hey, if you get a chance, can you go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review? That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer. Also, I've seen on Spotify some people leave comments too, so we thank you for those comments too. So you can go to Spotify also.
If you have a question, just record it on your smartphone and send it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. I love questions from our patrons, but I also really love hearing other people's voices on the show.
Well, we're going to have an audio question next time. Speaking of Patreon, the Beauty Brains are on Patreon. If you appreciate the fact that we don't have advertising, well, we need to keep the show going somehow, and we use Patreon to do that. So if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe at any level.
Don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at thebeautybrains2018. On X, we're at thebeautybrains. We have a Facebook page and a TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok. And someday we're going to publish something on that.
I don't think so.
Maybe.
But we have it. That's all that matters.
Before the next show, we're going to put one up. Wow, you mark my words.
Oh, goodness. So thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone.
Kittens.